Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Welcome to Teacher Quit Talk. I'm Miss Redacted.
And I'm Mrs. Frazzled. Every week we explore the teacher exodus to find out what, if anything, could get these educators back in the classroom.
We've all had our moments where we thought, what the hell am I doing here? From burnout to bureaucracy to soul-sucking stressors and creative dead ends.
From recognizing when it was time to go to navigating feelings of guilt and regret afterwards, we're here to cut out the gaslighting and get real about what it means to leave teaching.
We've got insights from former teachers from all over the country who have seen it all. So get ready to be disturbed. Join us on Teacher Quit Talk to laugh through the pain of the U.S. education system. We'll see you there.
Hi, I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Дамы и господа, добро пожаловать в Prevail. Это второй сезон нашей борьбы с криминальными сволочами. Ваш ведущий Грег О'Лиар.
I'm Greg O'Liar. This is Prevail. Welcome to the program. We've got a great show. From Mueller, She Wrote, and the Daily Beans, the one, the only, Allison Gill is here. We're going to bring her on in a few minutes. Before that, it's now, as I'm recording this, Wednesday morning, 8:20 a.m., and Dan Scavino is still on the loose, still successfully hiding from being served his subpoena by the January 6th Commission. I'm sure that these guys will figure out where to find him, hint the golf course. But in the meantime, I thought of a song parody, and I'm sure you guys are tired of hearing me sing this crap. So I've enlisted the aid of my wife, Stephanie St. John, who is a trained musical theater genius. So she's going to sing this dumb thing that I just wrote. Okay. If she can stop laughing.
Okay.
Don't cry for me, Dan Scavino. The truth is you're just a caddy. You got subpoenaed by the commission. They have some questions about sedition.
Yay!
I just got up.
Thank you, Stephanie. She's been up for less than 20 minutes. Coffee has not hit the system yet. Very good job. Very good job.
Thank you.
Syracuse University Department of Musical Theater. Very, very proud. Very proud. Represent. That was Stephanie St. John. we're going to be right back with Allison Gill.
It's your money. Why let the IRS take it from you? Or Interpol? Or your ex-wife? When high-net-worth individuals park their wealth, they look to Switzerland, Jersey, Luxembourg, and the Cayman Islands, the Mount Rushmore of tax havens. But did you know there's a perfectly good tax shelter right here in the United States? The Pandora Papers raves. South Dakota now rivals notoriously opaque jurisdictions in Europe and the Caribbean in financial secrecy. It's true, yeah? Here, in South Dakota, we have $360 billion in assets, the most secretive trust laws on Earth, and the real Mount Rushmore. Why trust your trust with the foreigners? Bring offshore to the Black Hills, here in South Dakota. We're yours until the Sioux Falls. And now, back to the show.
Okay, Allison Gill, welcome to the Prevail Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much. How are you, Mr. Oliar?
I am well, thank you. I have a giant coffee that I've just consumed most of, so I'm ready and raring to go. Now, I'm excited to have you on because, you know, I've been following your work before I got to know you, following your work, you know, first at Mueller, she wrote, and then The Beans, and now, of course, you run MSW Media, of which, full disclosure, this podcast is on that that vaunted network. But I want to talk about all this stuff, but what I want to talk about really on today's show is you and who you are, because you have generated so much content in the last, I don't know, 4 years. It's astonishing. Now I look back at my own archive and I'm like, how the fuck did I do this? And you put me to shame. I have no idea how you do it. Do you sleep? Do you get plugged into the wall like a Tesla? Are you operating on battery? Like, what's going on with you? How have you managed to do this?
Here's what I think it is. And of course, this is just a working theory, right? I have post-traumatic stress from an incident that happened to me in the military about 26 years ago. It was a content warning here. It was sexual assault. I tried to report and was, let's just say, discouraged, but threatened is probably more appropriate a word to not report that. And ever since, my sort of way of coping has been to understand every single thing I can about a subject so that I am not surprised by anything. I for example, I rewatch movies that I've already seen a million times so that I'm not like, you know, surprised by the ending. I tend to rewatch the same shows, binge the same shows over and over again. Sometimes I get into new content if it's super saccharine, like my buddy Ted Lasso. But, you know, if it's something that could surprise or shock me, I tend to stay away from it. So I think what's happened is that I've, since the former guy was elected, which was traumatic in and of itself for a lot of Americans and continues to be, I just sort of engrossed myself and like into the news, because that fire hose of a scandal, that shit show of things happening, not just every news cycle, but every 10 minutes, was traumatic. And so I guess I just dedicated myself to following it intently, knowing everything that I could about it so that I wouldn't be surprised. You know, things are shocking that happened, but not surprising. It's sort of like, I expect fireworks on the 4th of July. I do not on December 9th. What the fuck are you doing? So that's, I think, why. And I said, you know what, I need to boil this down, make it digestible, make it funny, make it relatable so that people can stay up with the news without being traumatized by it. And so since I was already watching it 24/7 and on top of it and in the weeds and in the details, I felt like the best thing I could do to help others not be shocked by it was to do the same for them and sort of deliver it in a way that made it a little bit easier to take.
It's been amazingly successful. And I'm so impressed by your ability to not only keep on top of everything, but remember everything. I mean, I remember the first time I came on your show, I was really fucking intimidated by you, by the way, because you can be very intimidating. You know, you're very professional, you know your shit like cold. And sometimes I have to cheat a little bit and go back and review things, but I feel like you don't. I feel like you just, you have such a good command of every, all these little, you know, court filings and, you know, something will happen. You'll be like, this is like page 7,000 million of the Mueller report in the third footnote where it's a, and I'm like, God, how does she do this thing? So it's interesting that's a way to cope. And of course, you know, that does make perfect sense. You said the word trauma twice, I think, or three times already in this. And I think that, you know, this has been a traumatizing time. Trump's presidency for any number of reasons has been traumatic. And between, you know, and even before the insurrection and the pandemic, it was this traumatizing thing, especially to women and sexual assault survivors who see this horrible, hulking, awful, clearly guilty predator, even in the debate stage behind Hillary Clinton, looking like he's going to strangle her. It's awful. It's awful stuff. But I want to get back to that in a minute. I want to rewind with you. Can we rewind? Because you mentioned your military service. I want to talk about that. But I want to go back even further. Like, where are you from? What did your parents do? Do you have siblings? Like, tell us the let's start at the beginning here, Allison.
Oh, first the earth cooled and then the dinosaurs came. Airplane quote.
Dinosaurs were put here by Satan.
And Jesus rode one.
Use us.
I know. I'm sorry. The T-Rex took up all the space on the Ark, really, is what happened. I had a saccharine childhood. I had a Norman Rockwell kidhood growing up. Dad had just gotten out of the Air Force, and that's a whole story that I learned much later about what he was doing in the Air Force. Mom was county recorder of Stowe, Ohio, dragged me to the polls every chance she could. Either maybe she just didn't have childcare, but you know, always went to the polls with her and learned about politics very early on. They were Republicans. I like Ike, you know, that whole pre-Trump Republicans, obviously.
Yeah.
And, my dad's dad owned a steel mill in Cleveland, and they built this soapbox colonial with black shutters and a red door. We had a Chevy Nova. There was a little pond behind our house I used to ice skate on in the wintertime. I had went to Catholic school. I had pigtails and a strawberry shortcake fucking lunchbox. It was gross, right? When I was six, my parents had a second kid. That's my younger sister, my little sister. And we were a nuclear family. And then, you know, until the steel industry went under, because after my dad got out of the military, he worked for Firestone for a minute doing some top secret shit, but then went back to work for W.J. Gill Steel, which was my grandpa's steel company. And then my dad was like, you got to retool, man. Steel's going down. You have to do something else, you know, plastics, you know. I just have that scene from The Graduate, you know, in my head. Exactly. How do you mean?
But
my grandpa wouldn't. So we all packed up and moved over to the Southwest, moved to Phoenix when I was very young, and continued to go to Catholic school. And my father passed away when I was young, when I was 16, he died from complications due to exposure to Agent Orange. And of course, Congress didn't pass, and the VA didn't recognize Agent Orange as a caustic thing for all of these issues, these medical issues that he had. That bill passed in 1991, and my father passed away in 1990. So after that, I took what little money I had from his leftover pension and VA benefits, was able to go to college at a very liberal arts school in Northern Arizona, NAU. I was a lumberjack. Go Lumberjacks.
Okay.
That's where I got into politics, working on the very first campaign of one Mr. Bill Clinton. And, taking with me all of my, you know, memories of trips to the polls as a kid, but definitely a liberal Democrat, progressive at the time, you know, very progressive ideas like it's cool to be gay.
Saxophone, you know, the saxophone's coming back. It's all, yeah, it's all good.
It's all, yeah, so, it's all very so big. But that's now, that's sort of the beginning, right? That's the beginning.
That's the genesis of the thing. So, okay, so it sounds, the Ohio stuff sounds very much like a Bruce Springsteen song, you know, you could totally get that going. But so you went to Catholic school. Are you Catholic? Were you raised Catholic, or they just thought the schools were better?
I was raised Catholic. My mom was Lutheran, but became Catholic because my dad's parents were very Irish Catholic. Although my grandma Gil was a witch also. I remember when I decided I didn't like Catholicism anymore. I think I was 14 or something. We were doing that thing where we were telling each other around the dinner table what we were going to give up for Lent. And I was like, I gave up this. This is stupid. And my grandma took me aside, super Irish Catholic, and she handed me a deck of tarot cards. And she goes, good girl, you know, patted me on the back. And she's like, you go read some books about drawing down the moon. Okay, bye. But very Irish Catholic. We became Catholic. I went to Catholic schools. But as soon as I fucking graduated, my mom's like, all right, fucking, they stopped going to church. It was over. Like, they were Catholics for the kids, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm no longer Catholic.
No, I was raised Catholic also, although I have found, you know, my dad, my mom was pretty, you know, she still goes to church. My dad was secretly a heathen, you know, so it'd be like, oh, we're going on Sunday. Where's dad? Oh, he's sleeping, you know. Okay. Yeah, no, he just didn't want to go. So I find that, you know, there is often these figures in the family of some importance that are like, yeah, this is, you know, they can't fake it convincingly enough for the kids to go.
But my Catholic high school, very progressive, cool, right?
Like that often happens.
We had theology class, but we had a bunch of science. They taught evolution. They were like, the Bible is symbolic. Please don't take this shit literally. We learned world cultures. We read a lot of really amazing books. My fucking reading list, summer reading list, before I entered in ninth grade. So after I met the summer between eighth and ninth grade, Zora Neale Hurston, Toni Morrison, the Beloved, Cry the Beloved Country, The Hiding Place, like really intense books for an eighth grader to be reading. But so very, very cool education, some nuns, some not. It was a very good school and good schooling. And so I'm glad I went. We did have to go to mass every Thursday in the gym, which was weird, but still.
Sometimes you learn, you know, you learn even in these experiences how to do, you know, certain things. So I'm glad that you went to a good Catholic school. I think most of them are. I think most of them are pretty good.
We had a cults class, which was so cool.
Well, who better to teach the cults class? You know,
yeah, they're like, they're like, not us, but check these weirdos out. Yeah.
You know, we're not a cult at all, you know, because let's symbolize the body of the right. Okay, we won't even go there. I'm technically a confirmed Catholic, so I'm allowed to say all this stuff. I'm allowed to be critical, you know.
But these were Jesuit Catholic schools.
So. Yep. Jesuits are the best. I love the Jesuits. They're, you know,
hiccups to the Jesuits in the house.
They got it going on. Okay, so your dad was in the Air Force. Can you talk about what he did, or you don't want to talk about that?
I can, but I didn't learn it until much later. I thought he was, because he got out before and he never talked about it up until the point he died. The only time I found out about stuff like that was when my mom was trying to tell the hospital, like, he was exposed to Agent Orange. Will you please listen to us? Because he's 46 years old and he's got 800 things wrong with him. And so, you know, last summer it came out, I think it was in Vanity Fair or the Guardian, the Atlantic, when they did the article on Trump calling veterans and war dead suckers and losers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I penned a tweet that said, my grandpa went down on the USS Gregory in Guadalcanal. I guess he's a sucker. My dad died from complications to exposure to Agent Orange in Vietnam. Guess he's a loser. I'm a veteran, but I'm not an amputee. So Trump says I can be in one of his parades. You know, and then it was something like, the choice is clear, Biden-Harris 2020.
Yeah.
Tweet went viral. Washington Post picked it up. And then they published it. And then I got, somebody had asked me, a couple people had asked me, how was your dad exposed to Agent Orange? Tell me how your dad was exposed to Agent Orange. And I don't know if they were like challenging
right,
the truth of it or just very curious. Sometimes it's hard to tell. And I was like, you know what? I don't know. And that started me on a 3-month research project where I interviewed my mom. I interviewed his brother, my Uncle Rick. And I found out he wasn't just a boots on the ground guy fighting the Viet Cong. He was actually in Air Force intelligence, cryptology. He had to take a 6-month intensive Russian learning program at Syracuse and he had to live with a Russian family for total immersion, and no one could know where he was. Then he was shipped to Cheyenne Mountain, right? NORAD, war games, whoop, whoop, you know, nuclear missiles. Trained there and then stationed at Kunia in Wheeler Air Force Base, Hawaii, 3-mile underground, you know, signals intelligence hub for the Pacific, right? And he had TDY orders to Vietnam like 10 or 12 times in 1967 and 1968, according to my mom. The MP would just show up in the middle of the night and be like, you're shipping out, Gil. He's like, okay. And he would go to Vietnam for a couple of weeks, come back. No, I couldn't find out what he was doing until I got a hold of a really great journalist who knew what the 1957th communications unit was doing. That was the unit that he was in. They were going to behind enemy lines, like Monkey Mountain, building communication relay stations, intercepting Russian messages, decrypting them, and then translating them, and then encrypting them and sending them to Clark Air Force Base in the Philippines, which is the number one hub for all communications. And he took part in war game tabletop exercises, one particular called Exercise High Heels, which is what we does our global communications network function properly in the event of a preemptive Russian nuclear strike. So, whoa, right? My dad was fighting the Russians.
That's, I have to admit, I was stressed out just listening to you tell that story. So I can't even imagine being like, okay, get out of bed. You're shipping to this horribly dangerous place and you're going to do this. Then you have to do like tech, like, you know, I try to like, you know, reprogram the VCR or whatever. I know nobody has VCR.
Yeah, anymore, no, but you like, know what I mean? He's a guy who could pick up a Rubik's Cube and do it in 2 seconds or you know, solve a look at a very complex mathematical string theory equation and have the answer. But he also had to learn to speak Russian fluently. After he got out, CIA tried to recruit him to work at NATO headquarters. He said, no, thanks. He ended up working for Firestone. And I alluded to that earlier. Yeah. Firestone during that time period was the first company to develop sub to ground nuclear missile launching capability. So I think he might have had something to do with that.
Firestone?
Yeah. And I'm like, did he just make the tires for the missile? No, yeah, no, that's Firestone, right? So, and then he finally got out of that and went back to work for Mike because he just wanted to get out of government altogether because it was just so he was conflicted about the motives. But he was also very much against the spread of communism and the threat of the spread of communism and to defend democracy. But he didn't like the democracy push. He liked it, the defense, but not the push.
Right, sure.
And so he was conflicted about that and also conflicted about the way our airmen, soldiers, Marines, and sailors were treated when they came back from Vietnam.
He's like, it sounds like a character from some kind of really cool movie where he's just, you know, they keep pulling me out and then they're going to go find him, you know, working at the steel mill saying, come on, Gil, you're one last hurrah. We have to send you to Cambodia. Oh, you're knock and this and that. And
no, come work at the tire store for real. It's going to be totally fine. Just tires. Okay.
Yeah. Just tires. Sure. Tires. What's the Russian word for tires? Yeah.
It dude just wanted to have a family and go golfing, right? Like that, like he just wanted to live a normal life.
So you didn't find out about this until fairly, I remember you telling me about it when it happened, but it was fairly recently, right? It was like within the last year you found out about this.
Yeah, yeah. And the imposter syndrome sort of melted away. You know, I've been questioning my sanity of risking and losing my 12 plus year government job to do this podcast. And people with imposter syndrome are always like, am I doing the right thing? Is this what I should be doing? Am I in the right place? And when I found out about that, it really did make me feel like I've been doing the right thing and I was in the right place.
Okay, I'm just going to say for the record, you are doing the right thing. And you're the right thing. I think that's pretty clear. You know, lots of, I'm sure you did a really good job at Veterans Affairs, you know, doing all that stuff. But that's, you can find somebody else to do that. I don't know that we can find somebody else to do what you're doing as well as you're doing it. So, you know, that's just fact. Sorry. I'll brook no.
Well, you remember I had a discussion with you in the green room in Boston. Like, oh, I was so worried because it was the first show that we were going to do without one of our co-hosts. And I'm like, you know, I think everyone's going to miss her. They're going to be mad and et cetera, et cetera. And you looked me right in the eye and you said, they're here for you, Gil. And I went, are you sure, man? Because, yeah, you know, it's an interesting. Do you ever just like take a step back, look at your life from like a 50,000 foot view and like, whoa, like I'm doing this.
Constantly.
I had one of those moments when, I've been a comedian. I've been telling dick jokes. I worked for the government, but I had this moment when the former associate deputy director of the Department of Justice, former associate deputy attorney general, asked me for the phone number of the former director of the FBI because I had it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh yeah, sure. And then I was like, what the fuck? Who am I even? Right.
That happens to me you're laughing. That happens to me all the time. I mean, I'm just like, yeah, I'm a novelist, man. I'm not even supposed to be doing this at all. And you know, why am I on a show with you know the counterintelligence guy and this ex-KGB guy and it's sort of a mind blow. And again, Lincoln's Bible and I have this joke that this is all the simulation is glitching. This is just a simulation. Yeah. Uh-huh. And now we're running out of, you know, things and it's just glitching, you know. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. That's it. Sometimes I'm like, you know, Donald Trump is how did that happen? I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. I did as we're recording this, it's this morning that I talked to Kurt Anderson, the guy, you know, he wrote Fantasyland and Evil Geniuses. And I asked him the same thing. He founded, he's one of the founders of Spy Magazine. And I said, what does 1986, 87 you think about this? Like of all the people, you know, in 2021, it's going to be Donald Trump, who's the president, doing the insurrection. And Eddie Murphy is just like doing Coming to America Part Two, like really, like almost without any fanfare. it's a madness, right? It's just, this whole thing's nuts. I think it's just a little bit nuts. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also it happened again when I was able to get an interview with the secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs. If anybody listening to this works in government at all, I mean, imagine the secretary of your agency is like a demigod, right? Yeah. Like that is an untouchable, way up there person, right? Because this chain of command, it's like if you're an E5 in the Army, that's the president to you. And to be able to interview him and talk to him about what happened to me at the department and ask him about what happened to him. If you remember, he was also surreptitiously removed from his position by the former guy. And to have that sort of thing in common and to have that discussion, again, just a mind scramble, as she would say in Weird Science.
Yes, yes. Imposter syndrome, glitch in the simulation, but also just kind of this is cool, because I don't know that I would rather be doing anything else.
No, I can't think of anything I would rather be doing either. Maybe teaching, but you know.
Oh my God, my heart just sank when you said that. Like, no, I don't. please, God, no.
You can do both.
Well, I'll die and go to hell and they'll give me a cup of hazelnut coffee and be like, your classroom is this way, professor. You know.
But you would look so good with patches on your elbows in a corduroy jacket and a pipe.
I did it. I taught as an adjunct creative writing, undergraduate level creative writing for three semesters. Fun.
I took that class. It made me a creative writing major for like 17 minutes.
I made no one a creative writer. Yeah. I did make them think I was crazy because I would read I would have them read poems and I would cry and they would look at me like I was insane.
I tell you one thing, one sure way to destroy your ability to creatively write is to write a doctoral dissertation. I still haven't recovered. I can't write anything fun or whimsical. It's all very analytical. It has to have footnotes, you know.
You can't. Although I guess now that you say it, even your tweets have footnotes in some ways. But yeah, I think that you can manage. So, I have no idea where we are on time, but let's take a little break and we'll be right back with Allison Gill. Okay, we're back with Allison Gill.
That was so fast.
I know, right? It's like boom. The time is a flat circle. Time is a flat circle. You know that's how it goes. Yeah. So let's talk now about. You opened the show talking about what happened to you in the military, but I'm curious about your military service because you have this thing that happened to your father, where he, you know, he died because of the exposure to Agent Orange. Which you do. So why did you join the military? Was that hard for you to do? Like what was your thinking when that happened?
Yeah, I at that point didn't know that's what had caused my father's death.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
He just to as far as I knew, he just had pancreatic cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and high blood pressure. But what made me join the military? I ran out of college money. In my family, it was a given that you would go to college, that you would complete your college degree. It was just like high school. That's just the next thing that you do. I mean, I moved to LA for a while. I was in a couple movies. I tried to be an actress for a minute and I was like, I got to finish school. And so I didn't have any money. So I joined the Navy to do that. And also, you know, there was a romantic feeling to it because I do know how my parents met and got married all that through you know, being a military wife and a military spouse. And there was a patriotic romantic notion about it as well. And I've always been patriotic in one way or another. But, you know, just sort of like also, hey, ask not what your country can do for you, that whole situation.
Were you ROTC or did you just enlist and then go, or how did that work?
Well, I took the ASVAB, right, which is the test where they see if you're smart enough to be in the military. And because of the score I got on that, I was heavily recruited to join the nuclear program.
Okay.
And it was that year that they just started letting women in the nuclear program. So I was one of the first four or five, I can't remember. I was heavily recruited to be a nuke. And so then I took a second test to make sure I could math. And then they were like, welcome, you're in the nuclear program. And so that's, they said $60,000 signing bonus, E5 out of A school, like really sweet deal. And so I took it.
Okay. And that helped. So you graduated college and then went right into the Navy?
I didn't graduate college. I just went into the Navy because I would join the Navy to finish college. But I went to Naval Nuclear Power Training Command, which is one of the hardest schools, I think the hardest school in the military, for brains, brain wise, not like physical wise.
Yeah.
63% attrition rate, something like that, something very high. That is it's about a year long. It depends on whether you're, back then we had three different kinds of nukes. You could be a machinist mate, an electronics mate, or an electrician's mate. And I chose machinist mate because it was the shortest school.
Okay.
And I like hammers and wrenches and stuff. So that's a three month A school, and power school is 6 months, no matter which A school you take, no matter what three of those you are. So it took about almost a year to get through the schooling.
Wow. See, this is what I didn't know. People won't know this. Not that I needed more convincing that you're like smart as hell, but now I'm like, I can't even remember the names of the three schools that you just said, let alone, you know, how they all fit together. And
I don't remember where I parked my car, but anything, and I'll be honest with you, anything kind of pre-trauma is in there forever. And ever since it's much harder to form memories, but, I have tricks. I know tricks, you know, like you said, if you wanted to find out what page the footnote is on for obstruction of justice for, you know, fire, trying to get McGahn to fire Mueller or something, I could probably get that for you. But, you know, there are things that I do need help with, but And sometimes the memory is a little like the guy who was just indicted, for example, by the Manhattan District Attorney, right? Ken something or other.
Kirsten, I think.
Kirsten. Yeah. Kirsten. Kushner friend, right?
Yep.
I'm looking at his name and I'm looking at his New York Observer job. And I'm like, I feel like I've reported on that, but I don't think I did. And so then I do a cross check in the millions of scripts that I've written. He doesn't show up. So I'm like, all right, I didn't. Okay. Because yeah. I feel like I would have remembered had I. So it's stuff like that, you know.
But it's also, I mean, you've now done so many shows that it's, and it's not like these are 15 minute shows. These are, you know, shows. There's a significant amount of time, and it would be understandable if you would, it would, you know, escape your memory that you, this very minor character who still is a Kushner associate, you know, is going down. So, all right. So you're in this program at the Navy, you leave the program and then you go where? You're they send you to, I don't know, to where the nuclear bombs are. I don't know.
Nuclear propulsion.
Okay.
I went to school for a year to learn how to make hot water. And you should have seen my fucking face too. I thought somehow the nuclear reactor directly propelled the ship. Right? Like nuclear exhaust would move it. I had no idea how it worked. And so when we're finally learning about the primary system, the secondary system, and heating up the water at 1600 PSI and pushing it through a pipe that heated up water in a secondary system that pushed that then steam through a turbine. And I was like, I raised my hand and I was like, wait a minute, we're just making hot water? And the fucking senior chief Dunn looked at me like, yeah, Petty Officer Gill, we're just making hot water. I was like, whoa, blew my mind. But yeah, that was it. Nuclear propulsion. I wouldn't work on nuclear weapons. No way, Jose. So I actually was, I got out. I was able to get out before I was sent to the USS Enterprise. I was going to be on the Enterprise, CVN-64, 8 nuclear reactors, big boat.
Why do they power these boats by nuclear reactors? I mean, is there some, that's just the most efficient method or what? And it's quieter? Tell me, because I don't know.
Super efficient. It's not quieter. You still have the same turbines, right? Okay. We're just not using coal. We're using nuclear power. And after about 20 years, the amount of waste that you get from powering a ship that size for 20 years is about the size of your fist.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's very manageable. And we've never had an incident or an accident. I'm very pro nuclear power if it's done right. I won't go in. And when I got, yeah, of course, when I got out of the military, I was heavily recruited to work at civilian nuclear power plants. I was like, you go fuck yourself. I'm not going near your civilian nuclear power plant. Have you seen Chernobyl? I don't want to dick with your positive coefficient for reactivity, man. You stand away. But the Navy did it right. And seriously, there's never even been an incident, let alone an accident in the nuclear Navy. It's safe. It's clean. The storage of the waste is safe and clean and causes no harm. It's absolutely wonderful.
Wow. Okay. See, this is something I don't really think about. You just think, oh, it's a nuclear submarine. Well, yeah, you know, it's just, obviously it's a nuclear submarine, but I don't know anything about how that stuff works. So, okay. Now we're getting to the point where I guess, the pivotal moment of your life is this traumatic experience that happened to you. And I don't want you to talk about it necessarily, but what happened after that? And how did you get from where we are now to what you're doing at Veterans Affairs, I guess is the question.
There's a big chunk of time in there. I tried to report it. I was told, first I was asked all the questions they asked, what were you wearing? Were you drinking? Were you flirting? What's your problem? And then they came in and sent somebody in and said, if you file a false rape report, you could lose your rate. You could lose your rank. You could lose nuke school. You'd be an undesignated striker out swabbing decks on a boat for the rest of your Navy career. We'll take away, you could be discharged, dishonorably discharged for filing a false report. We could court martial you for adultery, because my attacker was married, not me.
Oh, God.
So they scared the shit out of me and said, well, why don't we just chalk this up to what it is? It's a bad decision, bad judgment on your part. And I believed that. I believed it was my fault. It was my bad judgment. And I held on to that for 10 years. Eventually something came up where I had a problem with my foot, and they said, well, we can have the Navy doctors operate on your feet or you can get out. And I said, you know what? I'm going to need to think about that for a little while, because this is a big decision. It wasn't. But I wanted to make it look like it was hard for me to think about. And I came back a couple days later and I said, yeah, I'll exit. I'll take my exit. After that, I got out and started going back to school, which is what I intended to do. I got an honorable discharge. I used my vocational rehabilitation to get my bachelor's, and I used my GI Bill to get my master's. I worked my way up in a telecommunications company as the auditor, and I was saving this monstrosity of a fucking corporate conglomeration millions of dollars a year. And I was like, this is soul sucking. I hate it. So I quit and I cashed out my 401k and I sold my condo. And I joined a band and worked at Guitar Center part-time for the discount. And I did that for about 3 years. And then I got
What did you play in the band?
I initially played guitar. I was a classically trained musician from the age of three, but I had taught myself guitar in high school. I wanted to play guitar, but we didn't have a bass player. And since I was the only classically trained musician in the band, they were like, you got to play bass. I was like, fine. So I bought a bass and I played bass. Working for getting other jobs in hotel restaurant management in the industry jobs, right? Because I was a waitress and a bartender putting myself through college. So that was my wheelhouse, and just played in a band and fucked off for a bunch of years. And then I was out of money and I was like, all right, I should probably do something. It was around that time Obama was running for office, and he reiterated JFK's refrain, ask not what your country can do for you. I was like, well, I can't go back in the military. I'll work for the Department of Veterans Affairs. I'll help other people who went through what I went through. I'll help people like my dad. And especially all, the post 9/11 OEF, OIF veterans, it ties into what we're seeing on the ground in Afghanistan now. And it took about 6 months with an MBA to get a clerk job at the Department of Veterans Affairs, but I ended up getting it. Worked my way up through the ranks, got my PhD in public health because that was going to be my career for the rest of my life. And then I started a secret podcast at night, which ended up being investigated by the Trump administration. And then they pulled a Mick Mulvaney on me. They moved my job across country, knowing that I wouldn't move to get me to quit. And they fired me.
There's a lot to unpack there. So I'm going to go back a little bit and make some, first of all, thank you for sharing the traumatic experience, which I know is difficult. And I don't, like I said, I don't necessarily want you to talk about, but I want to say just, it's astonishing to me how these rules were and how awful and misogynist the entire system is. And this is a time the Clarence Thomas hearings and stuff like that in the 90s. And then you had that movie, Disclosure, which came out. Remember that movie? And it's like, it's the one... Demi Moore, Michael Douglas. It's like the one example ever of sexual harassment where the man is falsely accused. This literally has never happened before. So the idea that they would have to tell you these things about like, oh, the false rape. When does that doesn't happen. It's like,
but it happened. It happened all the time. The bad part happened all the time because when they interviewed me for The Invisible War, which was the Oscar nominated documentary on military sexual assault, I told them my story, and then I didn't know how they were going to use my story in the movie, but I went to the film premiere, and it turns out I was used in a montage of many women and men who had the exact same things said to them, almost like it was a script, down to the adultery charge, because their attacker was married. Filing a false claim, you'll be discharged, dishonorably discharged, court-martialed. Same verbiage used I thought it was really skillfully done the way they put that montage together in the movie to show that, hey, this was the way of it.
The threats and stuff. But did that ever happen? I wonder, like, were there people running around filing false claims all the time and getting charged with adultery? No.
The commanders didn't want the rape on their watch.
It's disgraceful and awful. So I just want to say that, for the record. Now, okay, so now I'm fascinated by this band thing too. So are you good? Are you a good guitar player? Or I know you play bass. Yeah. Oh, here's a joke. Okay.
Yeah.
So this kid, 16-year-old kid, comes to his dad and says, hey, I need $20. I'm gonna go, you know, it's Thursday, I'm gonna go have a bass lesson. The dad says, great, okay, here's $20. Kid goes, the next week he comes back and he says, you know, dad, I need $20. I'm going to go, you know, have my bass lesson. Dad says, great. Gives him the $20. The Thursday after that, the kid comes back and he says, okay, dad, I'll see you later. And the dad's like, well, don't you need, you know, money for the lesson? He's like, nah, I got a gig. That's it. That's the joke.
That's very funny. Once I picked up the bass, I could play it, you know, but I did take lessons. You can always be better. Everyone can always be better. But you know, my influences were like, you know, Kim Deal, you know, of the Pixies, and I ended up being a New Order, Joy Division. I ended up sort of being a obvious guitarist with a bassist, because I had all these bass solos and, you know, playing high up on the neck, doing melodies and stuff like that.
When we were in high school, like having these battles of the bands were kind of a big deal, and everybody would, you know, a lot of kids that were really great guitar players, and sometimes, like that, they'd get one of these guitar players to play bass and we'd be like, no fair guitar player. That's it, you know, because that wasn't fair.
The rest of my band was awful, but you can actually hear it. I think it's on Spotify.
It's on Spotify. What is the name of this band?
The band is called Velvet Tongue and the album is called Cassette.
Okay. It's clever. Velvet Tongue Cassette.
Yeah, right. and then I put out a solo album in 2006 where I did all the instrumentation, except for the drums. A friend who's a drummer for White Buffalo did the drums. His name's Matt Lanott. And that album is just by Allison Gill, and it's called Prophet Flower, P-R-O-P-H-E-T, Flower, also on Spotify. So you can hear what I listened to The Cure a lot when I may put that album out.
Okay.
and then when we did... when we did the Velvet Tongue stuff, I was very, very into Pavement and the Pixies. But please don't judge me on the drummer. The drummer was terrible.
Okay, I'm going to play the drums right now and judge you on the drums. No, I'm kidding. Okay, so let's talk about the veterans. I know you've told this story before, but I do want to sort of break it down because it's one of these awful things that happens. There's so many awful things that happened in the Trump administration that, you know, what happened to you is a drop in the bucket, but it's still fucking awful. And I think people should know about it, which is that you use Mick Mulvaney as a verb. So can you explain what happened, just so, you know, people listening who are not aware of the story.
Yeah, well, the imposter syndrome raises its ugly head again, right? I was like, nobody cares about my show. Nobody's listening to my show. When I get a new, a revised Hatch Act that includes social media and podcasts, and the word resisting, you know, from Trump, where, you know, because there was nothing wrong with the original Hatch Act. It covered the bases, but Trump wanted to, you know, it said you can't oppose or support a political candidate for office. You can't do fundraisers for him, et cetera. Trump comes in and says, and you can't say bad things about Trump. And it's like, you are a candidate for office, you fucking dumbass. But no bad things about Trump, no resisting. And then he put out social media guidance. You can't tweet bad about the, you know, just like, and I'm like, I'm sure this has nothing to do with me and my tweets and my podcast. I'm sure it's got nothing to do with me. Then my employee records were requisitioned by the Office of General Counsel in DC. And I was like, why? And they're like, we can't tell you. We just have to, we're only obligated to tell you that we're doing it. I'm like, okay, enjoy. Cause I have all outstanding performance reviews. I've been an outstanding, knock yourself out. April comes, April 2019 comes, my bosses fly out to San Diego from DC, on your dime, by the way, take me to a hotel by the pool and tell me that my job is moving across the country. I am the West Region TRICARE liaison to the Department of Defense. There's two of me in the country, a West region and an East region. There are two TRICARE offices in the country, one in Falls Church in DC, one in San Diego, California. I live in San Diego, California. I'm the West region TRICARE liaison at the TRICARE office at the West office. They're like, we're moving your job to DC. I'm like, well, who's going to watch the West region? Oh, you are from DC. Okay. But I can't move. Okay. Well, then you have to sign this piece of paper saying we're going to fire you. And I was like, all right, that's weird. So then I went on I took all 12 weeks of my leave at once.
Good. Good.
I said, you know what? I'm going on tour. And went out on tour, come back. And the day I come back, August 6th, that's the day the Washington Post reports Mick Mulvaney talking to his donors saying, we found this great new way of getting rid of federal employees that we don't like, because it's real hard to fire a federal employee, but we found this way. We just move them where they can't move, and then they quit, or we fire them because they won't move. They did it to the USDA, if you remember. And that same day I got a phone call from my supervisor, who, by the way, has the job that I was offered a year earlier. I was offered that job. It's in DC, and I said I can't move to DC, so they knew I couldn't move to DC.
Yeah.
And this guy who's got my job comes to me and says, you know, we're investigating. This is a fact-finding investigation. And I was like, oh, okay, I need my lawyers. Because I had hired lawyers at that point to advise me on the Hatch Act and to make sure I wasn't doing anything wrong with the ethics and all that stuff. And they go, nope, no representation for you. You have to answer my questions. And I was like, all right. So they did this courtroom drama sort of felt like they were awesome gotcha stuff. Like, I'm going to need you to open your laptop and go to MuellerSheWrote.com, please. You know, and they walk me through all this. Click on about, click on hosts, scroll down. Is that you? You know, and I'm like, I think I need a lawyer. And they're like, you don't get one. You have to answer my questions. And I was like, yeah, that's me. It's a fucking picture of me. AG, like, way to go, Perry Mason. But the funniest part was when they said, all right, I'm going to need you to go to twitter.com/blah blah blah/4968-3-24. You know, they spell out this fucking URL from Twitter. And I go to it, and it's a video of me in Minneapolis at the Parkway Theater leading the audience in a three-part harmony of the word fucked. While talking about Paul Manafort, I ended every show with this. You saw it.
Remember? Boston. Yeah.
I split the audience into four parts. Actually, usually the mezzanine gets to say the fucked at the end really loud, leading them in this thing. And I'm watching this, and one half of me is terrified. Like, I've somehow run afoul of ethical considerations, which as a government employee is the last thing that you want to do if you're an ethical government employee. But half of me is dying laughing because I'm sitting here leading this three-part harmony of the word fucked, followed by a standing ovation. And they're like, is that you? And I'm like, what do you think? Like, yeah, that's me on my time off doing my hobby. I've told dick jokes for the last 10 years on stage. Nobody ever questioned me about that.
Yeah.
This is really interesting. And then they spent the next, I don't know, 9 or 10 months arguing with me about telework and reasonable accommodations, and eventually fired me for being medically unfit. It removed me for being medically unfit. Finally, in March of 2020.
Were you, I mean, you must have been terrified on some level and probably I mean, you have your trauma where something awful, you've already been through a bureaucratic fucking Kafka-esque nightmare once in your life. Now you're doing it again, you know?
Well, yeah. Well, you forget in the middle there too, I was trying to get my compensation and pension for being a disabled veteran for the PTSD. They denied me three times out over 5 years. And it wasn't until I was in the movie that the head of Women's Benefits, Department of Veterans Affairs, retired Brigadier General Allison Hickey, called me personally. She called everyone that was in the film and said, how's it going? And I was like, dude, like 5 years, three denials. They're saying it didn't happen because I didn't report it. And she's like, hang on a second. And then 2 weeks later, I had my exam and I had my claim adjudicated. So that was a big time betrayal number two from a governmental entity. And now this. Yeah. And, you know, I was a GS-14, which is the same as Lisa Page, if you remember, of Strzok and Page fame. She's GS-14. Yep. I was a GS-14. That was a very good paycheck and, very good pension. And I was going to retire. I had spent $80,000 getting a PhD because that was going to be my job for the rest of my life. So yeah, I was pretty terrified, but I was having so much fun with the podcast that I was like, all right, I've got a net to fall into here. I don't know. Yeah. It's a less secure net for sure. But it's still going and it's been going pretty good. And now I got my own network. So, cause I was tired of the way that the networks were treating podcasters. And I wanted to make it better. So that brings us to today.
To make you open your laptop and go through the thing. I mean, did you try to fuck with them at that point? Just like misspell Twitter? I don't know.
I wanted to, but like, it's the government, right? And this is an institution that I have full respect for, and I dedicated my life to it. And like I said, the ethics and the not wanting to run afoul of policy is just so deeply ingrained. And, you know, I was in the military. I come from this whole background. Yeah. And it's wanting to be on the right side of things was so important to me that I spent pretty much any additional extra money that I had from the podcast on making sure, on lawyers to make sure that I wasn't doing anything wrong, because it's that important to me. I didn't tell my story until a year after I had been removed from my job, because I wanted to put enough space between me and it so that it didn't look like I was profiting off of my government. Right. My time in the government. I never gave my name. I never gave my title. I never gave my agency. I did everything after hours. I had, if I needed a tweet to go out, somebody else would send that tweet out during hours. So, you know, working 40 hours a week during the week, packing up on a Friday night, traveling to a city to do a live show, coming back before, you know, I had to go back to work on Monday morning, and doing everything in the evenings and on the weekends. It got really tough. So, and you know, I'm ultimately glad that things ended the way that they did.
I think it worked out for the best.
I don't think I would have been able to quit myself.
Do you think that the guy that was there doing this ridiculous, stupid interrogation of you realize what a fucking dipshit he seemed like at that time, or was there no self-awareness? Like, probably. Did he seem guilty at all?
No. And I did find out later that the Office of General Counsel was assisting him in the investigation and advising him, and further found out through a FOIA request that they were monitoring my social media activity at the secretary level, at the secretary of VA level, when Wilkie was in there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's nuts. It's Mulvaney looks like, you know, the Nazi from Raiders of the Lost Ark before his face gets melted. And Wilbur Ross is after the face gets melted. It's the same Nazi in different stages of melting face.
Yeah. That's actually how I refer to Mick Mulvaney in my book that I'm working on.
Oh, yeah. Can you talk about that now that you've teased it, or am I going to have to go back and delete that part?
No, it's totally fine. It's totally fine.
What is this book of which you speak?
Working on a book about justice and how we can wait for it, or we can manifest it.
You said manifest it. I was going to say you can manafort it.
Unless you're pardoned. Womp and womp. Manafort destiny.
Manafortress of solitude. I don't know.
Well, do you remember when we got the first indication I got that these dipshits actually believe in the shit that they're saying is when they released the texts between Hannity and Manafort.
Yes.
And I was like, these fuckers really believe this shit. or they're writing it thinking that they're going to get caught and they're going to get out, right? Because, you know, it's always best to write emails and text messages like they'll be released one day. But yeah, we called them the Manatee texts because they were between Manafort and Hannity. And and somebody, one of our listeners sent some fan art in of what a manatee looks like. And it's fucking terrifying, Greg.
Well, it's like when what's his name? Tucker Carlson was in Hungary a couple weeks ago, you know, with Orban, who's basically Mogilevich's bagman.
Yeah, goose stepping with his friends.
Yeah, I said it was like a human centipede where Mogilevich was the top and Tucker was the bottom and Orban was, you know, kind of in the middle. So, which explains the shit eating grin on Tucker Carlson's face at all times. So, yeah. I was going to say the it made me think of that. I remember those texts and I was blown away by it because I thought, shit, I thought Hannity was smarter than this, but he is, I guess not. He's a moron. Mm-hmm. And the most hopeful that I felt in the 4 years of the Trump presidency, especially in maybe the first three, was when Manafort got indicted. That was just, I remember I was at the, I'm not a big gym guy, but I was at the gym that morning doing deadlifts and I felt like, oh, I could throw this fucking thing through the ceiling. I feel so good right now. And the second best moment.
November 2nd, I believe, 2017, or October 31st. It was between October 31st and November 2nd, 2017. I remember it like it was yesterday because that's when I set the microphones up on the kitchen table and said, time to record the first episode.
Nice. The second best time was when we found out that Hannity was Michael Cohen's
other third client.
I was on Twitter. I was like, somebody was live tweeting it, and I was, you know, I kept hitting refresh, and I remember, oh my god, it's Hannity! It was so good. It was so good. I loved it so much.
My biggest woohoo moment in the last few months is when the decision came down from the Department of Justice that they would not represent Mo Brooks in the Swalwell lawsuit against him. I was refreshing Pacer, refreshing. Come on, you better not do this to me, Merrick Garland. I've been sticking up for you, you motherfucker.
I know. And, come on, and Merrick Garland.
Bam, he did the right thing. And I was like, oh God, thank you. Thank you for giving me a little bit of a cushion because I've been a pinata for you for the last fucking month because of his decisions on Lafayette and E. Jean Carroll.
He's been not as great as maybe we would have liked, but we'll see. Jury's still out. I think the jury's still out. God knows what.
Literally, quite literally, the jury is still, the grand jury is still out.
Exactly. So, okay. So when is this book coming out? Or did you write it yet? What's the deal?
The proposal is almost finished. I'll be shopping it around. I think Mary Trump has been kind enough to do a blurb for me along with Andy McCabe and a bunch of really amazing people that I've been able to interview over the years. So I don't think I'll have a problem selling it, but we know we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. If it's not sold yet.
It's not an imminent release then. I'm not really. Yeah,
No, it's going to be a while. And I'm writing a one woman show to do a book tour with it. And that's my next big thing. And then once that's done, I want Bill Maher's job.
That would be so good. That's my vision. Somebody else should have that job for sure. The what was I going to say? Publishing. This is my stock joke, but publishing moves so slow that Al Gore shot a documentary about it melting. That's you know that. Just prepare yourself. As a guy who has a couple books out, it's astonishing how you think that the wheels of justice move slow. Let me tell you about publishing. Woo!
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I've heard.
Molasses, man, molasses. Okay, so I think it's been about an hour. So here, I'm going to ask you one last question. What's the deal with this red dress? Because you were talking about this red dress. It's a piece of art. You have all these good pictures up of it. What was the deal with that? What were you doing that you were wearing that red dress?
Oh, I went to an event in New York, a private event in New York, okay. And had a very, very handsome date to go with me. And the night before I flew to New York for this event, I stopped at Macy's and I was like, you know what? I got 8 little black dresses. What's 9? You know, what's another? I just want a new, something new. All of these are pre-pandemic outfits. I want a new what I thought was going to be post-pandemic outfit, but a little window of no pandemic for a minute outfit. And I got there and I'm looking around the little black dresses and I walk by the Alexander McQueen rack and there's this beautiful, amazing red dress that is 10 times more than I wanted to spend. But I couldn't stop thinking about it as I'm trying on these little black dresses. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to try it on. And I tried it on and I was like, like crepuscular rays came through the dressing room and the choirs sang. And I was like, I can't. And I was like, I can't. It's ridiculously expensive. So I put it back. And then I was still in the black dresses and I got this really cute blouse that I ended up wearing during a different event that weekend. But then as I'm almost to the door of Macy's, I turn back around and I walk back to the lady. I'm like, I can't leave the store without it. It needs to be tailored. And she's like, they have those in New York. And I was like, all right. So I purchased it and I wore it and it's the most amazing thing. And I hope I get to wear it again soon.
It's good. The pictures are really good. It looked like you're having a lot of fun. Your consort for the evening, very dashing, whoever he is, this guy.
He's also a secret. He does secret stuff that we can't talk about for the government. So it's all very classified. It's all very hush hush.
It's all very hush hush. Okay. So he works in, so he gets messages in the mail that tell him to go to Cambodia to install satellites in the, no, I'm kidding. That moves it back to the beginning of the thing. So what's the schedule for Daily Beans and Mueller She Wrote? What's the difference between them at this point? And what's the schedule and routine of that?
Well, Mueller She Wrote, I resurrected. It was shuttered for about a year, right. Mostly because of Bill Barr and nothing was happening. But things are moving again, like Tom Barrack, etc. Oh, things are moving again in the Southern District and the Eastern District, and we're watching it. And you know, I want to report on it. So that comes out every Sunday, every week, and then Daily Beans comes out every weekday morning, first thing in the morning. And then I have the MSW Book Club where I go through different books. Right now, we're doing Hatchet Man by Ellie Honig, and. For the last episode, I have the author come on and answer questions that people have that have arisen during the first six or seven episodes of the series. That comes out every Sunday as well. And then, of course, I have Cleanup on Aisle 45 with Andrew Torres, which is everything. It's just what it sounds like. It's what we're doing, what the Biden administration is doing to clean up on Aisle 45. So those are the four shows that I currently actually participate in. And then of course we have amazing shows like yours on the network. We've got Justice Matters with Glenn Kirshner. We've got On Topic with Renato Mariotti.
Yeah.
And we're bringing more on every day. We've got The Way We Win with Swing Left is now a part of the group. We have so many. I know I'll leave some out if I try to name them all.
It's a great, and okay, we were talking before about being like, holy shit, like when I go look at the page and I'm there with all those people, I'm like, holy shit, man, this is good stuff. It's good stuff.
Frank Figlusi, the Bureau, right? Like I'm intimidated by his artwork. I'm like,
He's intimidating, but I was on the show with him once. He's the nicest guy. And, I very rarely get nervous when I do those shows and I was terrified. And then it turns out there was no reason to be, because he's super nice. So your Twitter, what you have a bunch of different Twitter handles, but it's
well, since I've been able to come out as myself, mm-hmm. after hiding as AG for a very long time, I'm now, my personal Twitter is at Allison Gill, two L's in Allison, two L's in Gill. There's the good old at Mueller She Wrote, which is my main tweeting device, right, for all things news and threads and speculation. And of course we have at Daily Beans Pod, which is where you can get all the shows and little audiograms and news for coming out, that's coming out from the Daily Beans. So those are the three main ones.
And I will put them on the, the little page and thing that I write to accompany this when it drops. So
If you want my news analysis of the news, Mueller She Wrote. And then if you want my personal, what shit's going on in my personal life, at Allison Gill.
You want both. Everybody listening to this wants both. I think it's safe to assume. So, okay. So the word GIF, how do you pronounce that?
GIF.
Oh my God. I thought you of all people would say GIF, because then your last name should be Allison Jill. That's all. That's I thought of it.
You're incorrect. It's Jeff.
I was like, she must pronounce it the same way that her last name. Anyway, that's all. It's a stupid joke. Okay.
And just because the first word is graphic doesn't mean it has to be a hard G. We call the select Senate Committee on Intelligence sissy, not sicky. So it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, whether that's a hard G or a hard C in the word as to how we pronounce it in the acronym. And there's a lot of different examples of that. And the guy who invented it says GIF. So I go with that. Just like I don't say Moog, I say Moog, because that's how Moog says his own name.
Gotcha. Okay. So Allison Gill, thank you so much for joining me. This is really fun. Thank you for being so forthcoming about all your personal stuff, because I know it's hard sometimes to talk about that. And I appreciate it. I know the listeners appreciate learning more about you and really just a remarkable job that you've done. I mean, these are four going on five now, completely fucked up years. And you've really helped me and a lot of other people make sense of it all and keep everybody honest and let us know what's going on. And it's such a valuable service that you've been providing and continue to provide. So thank you for that.
Oh man, you're welcome. I don't even know. I'm learning to say you're welcome.
That's all you have to say. All right. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you. And thank you for all
the
your
Prevail
doing.
Theme song this. Is by Matthew really Fassa. Sophia Tereshchenko sure. provided the Russian introduction. Voice talent is provided by Tally Briggs, Signet Della, Stephanie St. John, Brett Petticord, Ryan Byrne at History Falls Apart, and me. Thanks to Allison Gill, Molly Hawkey, Kanai Williams, and everyone else at MSW Media. Please subscribe to the Prevail website with updates every Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday. Your $5 monthly subscription funds the site and the podcast. Visit gregoliar.com to learn more. Thanks for listening. Drive safely. Don't forget to tip your server. Until next time, we shall prevail.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.